You can make great wine, but if you can't sell it, you're nowhere.
You know, I'm the guy that loves the cat piss descriptor.
To be a winemaker, you need to be a little bit crazy.
If we really do want to spend 20 hours a day here through harvest, why not have as much fun playing and doing as much different things as we can?
It's definitely different every single year.
We make a white Barbera, which is called Carica l'Asino, which, by the way, means load the donkey, and we don't know why.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 295. This week we feature Zachary Smith of Barlow Vineyards in Napa Valley. From our perspective, the smaller the winery, the more interesting the wine. Barlow Vineyards is in Calistoga, and Zach Smith is the vineyard manager as well as national sales manager. Barlow makes the kind of wines that they like to drink, and large production is not what they do. They focus on wine, not huge production. Zach was in town and visited the Life Between the Vines studio a few weeks ago while doing a tasting tour, and we were able to sit down with him for a chat. A wine family can extend generations, so it is here you get to listen to the future. Well, welcome to Milwaukee, and welcome to Life Between the Vines. We are here with Barlow Vineyards Vineyard Manager, Zach Smith. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming by. This is kind of a last-minute thing, and you happen to be here in town. And you're doing some tasting here today?
Yeah, so I do partial vineyard management, and then also national sales.
So you're on the road a fair amount, I would imagine.
Yeah, here and there.
Yeah, cool. Vineyard manager, I think, for some people, is a little bit of a mysterious term. What do you do? What exactly is your function?
So we take care of the vineyard. So we grow the vines from the beginning to the end of season. Winter's a dormant time of season, so we're doing a lot of property management in winter. But we're from seeding in November, which is a cover crop, to mowing that cover crop, and then then disking it into the soil, using fertilizers, adding nutrients into the soil, to pruning, suckering, all the way to harvest.
So you're really, you know, you're the ones with the dirty hands.
Yeah, in the soil. It all starts in the soil. Yeah.
So how long have you been doing that?
So my family's been doing it since 94. My grandparents and parents purchased the property located up in Calistoga. 50 acres, 36 planted. When we purchased the property, it was around 20 acres planted. We actually had to rip out about half to a leaf disease. And replanted it to 36 acres.
So are you guys all estate?
All estate. We do produce, well, we negociant one wine, and that's our Sauvignon Blanc. We make that because my mom loves Sauv Blanc, and got to keep mom happy.
Got to keep mom happy.
Mom gets what mom wants.
And nothing wrong with SB. That's one of my favorites.
No, I love Sauvignon Blanc as well.
Yeah. Does that come from Calistoga?
No. Well, it depends on the vintage.
Oh, okay. Varies then.
Varies. We're looking for a style.
You make an interesting grouping of wines, and one that stood out for me is Cab Franc, because not a ton of winemakers make that, and that's a little more of a challenging wine to make as well as sell, isn't it?
Yes, but I think as far as the branding of Cab Franc and the selling of Cab Franc, it's really coming around. We make it as a single varietal. We don't do any blending. That's what we're mostly known for. But the Cab Franc, either people love it or hate it.
That's true, yeah.
And if you love it, you love it from all over the world, usually. I mean, there's obviously instances that you're just like, okay, I don't like this one. It's a slow grower. It's not as, well, at least on our property it is. It typically gets picked after Cabernet Sauvignon. This year, it actually will be picked on the same day, which it jumped up and ripening. It's been slow growing as well. When we planted it, we weren't getting too much off of it. But now it's really come to maturity, which is nice.
Well, and you also make Cabernet Sauvignon. We just talked about SB. What else do you make?
We make a 100% Zin, a 100% Merlot. The Zin is about a quarter of an acre. We actually had to, it used to be planted to Malbec when we purchased the property. But the deer loved it so much that we weren't getting a crop. So we actually planted Zin instead. And it was meant for mostly like the family for our table wine. And then we were like, when we started the business, it took off and people really enjoyed it. So we put it in as another one of our SKUs.
Cool. Well, now, you just brought up a point about the deer eating the grapes, and that's something that kind of fascinates me because you got all kinds of critters that want at your stuff, birds being one of the biggest problems. What do you do? How do you deal with that?
So our property, for some reason, the birds don't really go for the fruit, but they do go for our irrigation. Yeah.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Every year, my dad and I are out there fixing irrigation.
Wow.
And the one block in particular, they go to town. And then you're fixing irrigation or the drippers that they hit. But then also coyotes, they'll rip at the drip lines.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? What would motivate them to do it? I mean, there's no
water.
Food, just the water.
Water.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, water is kind of scarce. So.
Yep. Yeah.
Interesting.
Hopefully we have a good winter this year.
Yeah, I hope you do too. Well, you know, after the fires and everything. And actually, let's take a moment to talk about that. Being in Calistoga, how did you guys fare?
So we were very lucky. We dodged a bullet. We were about 3 miles south of the fire. It ripped through the northern part of Calistoga and then on its way into Santa Rosa, where it did a lot of devastation. The Tubbs Fire.
Right.
I mean, there were fires all over the Napa Valley. But that one in particular got pretty close. The Friday after it had started, we were pretty worried because they were anticipating heavier winds than what actually happened. But those winds didn't come, so we definitely lucked out. The firefighting crews were huge.
Yeah. I know that Calistoga was, if I'm not mistaken, evacuated. Did you guys evacuate?
We did not. The evacuation line was actually north of us at Dunawiel, which is a crossroad from Silverado Trail to 29. We are just south of that, not even maybe a quarter of a mile. So technically, we weren't mandatory evacuated. So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you guys got lucky because obviously a lot of people didn't, and it was a pretty frightening time for all of you, not just because of your crops, but because you live there.
Yeah. No, it was when you wake up to the smell of smoke on your birthday, which is when it started, it was not fun.
A lousy birthday gift.
Yeah. There was one that we saw from our window, and luckily they had jumped on it and didn't let it go anywhere. But if that had started, I don't even know what would have happened. The dryness, the winds, I mean, it's hard, the heat, and the fuel. I mean, California has a lot of fuel. There's a lot of dry brush, but there's just a lot of wood and forests and things that burn.
That's California.
Yep.
Yeah, and especially this time of year.
Yeah. Luckily, we were... For us, not all the farmers, but we actually had all of our fruit off, so we were very fortunate.
Great.
Yeah.
That's hard. So okay, now we're talking about 2017 in terms of the crop. Now we're looking at 18.
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
It's going to be a really good vintage. It's kind of like slow barbecue, slow and low. So we had that we had a big heat spike in July. All of July was kind of our hottest month, and the rest of August, September, it's been that kind of perfect weather, not too hot, not too cold. Above, when you're getting into the hundreds, the vines are kind of shutting down and kind of trying to survive. So when you can kind of just stress them enough, you really get that really good fruit development.
And I heard you just got some rain a couple days ago, or at least
actually last night.
Yeah.
So we're a little worried about our Zin because it's still on the vines. We're looking at that today, But with that, I mean, Zin's, the skin around the Zin grape is very thin. So if you get water on it, it'll absorb that water and then burst.
Wow.
But then you're also looking at, water and mildew and rot. And so we went through yesterday and leafed, trying to get off all the water we could. We'll see. They're probably taking a look at it right now.
Where are you in harvest right now in terms of the cab and the...
So all of our Merlot is off. Mm-hmm. We will be harvesting our Cabernet on Tuesday. The Cab Franc will come off that day as well, and the Petit Verdot. We'll see what happens with the Zin. We sell 85% of what we grow, though. So the people that purchase our grapes, they choose when they want to grow or when they want to pick. As far as I know, I don't know when they will be picking the cab. They've already taken their Merlot, so we're all good there.
Now I'm curious, as a vineyard manager, and you're obviously, then you have people leasing. I assume that's what we're talking about.
So we're talking about, we will grow it throughout the year, and then we'll sell it to them, as we'll do a certain amount of years in a contract.
Now, is this one particular winery?
Or no, there's several. There's several.
Okay, so
throughout the northern Napa Valley.
What I'm curious about is to understand. I know a lot of winemakers want to be very hands-on with other vineyards when they're working with them. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? They want to really keep an eye on their fruit. I assume you run into that same situation, that they're kind of working with you.
Yeah.
Is that how you guys do it?
Kind of. I mean, we throughout the year we will do what we do, on all of the property, all of the acreage. When that comes, we'll discuss, but and if there's something that they really want to do that's very different than we typically do, I mean, we'll talk about it. That doesn't mean we'll always do that. It's all a conversation.
In the end, they're your vineyards.
Yes, exactly.
I was just kind of wondering if that's the kind of thing that makes you a little bit crazy, but it sounds like you have a pretty comfortable relationship.
It makes it, well, when you're sitting and trying to get that fruit off, yeah, it makes you a little crazy. Yeah. But in the end, it always works out.
Well, how the heck did you get away right now, this time of year? I mean, for what it's worth for our listeners, this is October 3rd, so you're kind of in the heart of harvest right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. So being in the vineyard, though, we have one piece of property. So we're not bringing in tonnage. We don't have a winery on property, and we only make about 1,800 cases. So we do custom crush, which is like renting an apartment at a winery. You rent the equipment, you rent the space, you rent the time. You make your wine there, you age your wine there, you bottle it there, and then we store it a temperature-controlled warehouse. We stick to the farming side of things. We've had the same winemaking crew team since 99.
You'd mentioned your winemaker is Ignacio Blancas.
Yes.
And Ignacio is an old friend and goes back to early days of our podcast. He's a great guy and a darn fine winemaker.
Yes, he is. No, he's amazing. He's been consulting with us and is our winemaker since 99.
Excellent.
He's, he makes some amazing wines.
He really makes some amazing wine. Great. Yeah, and he is one of those guys. He's just, I think there's dirt and grapes in his veins.
Yeah, no, he loves it.
Yeah.
It's awesome to see the passion and the growth, really.
Right. And if I can, just for a moment, for our listeners, they may remember that was Summers Winery, who
yes,
he's the winemaker for.
Yes.
So is that where you do your crush, I assume?
We do not.
Okay. So where do you do your crush?
It's right around the corner from our property, pretty much 30 seconds to out our driveway to the left. It's called Fairwinds. Mm-hmm. It is the old Northern Cuvison facility.
Yeah.
It's really close. We throw the grapes in the back of the truck and we're there in 30 seconds.
Cool.
Which is
That's very,
very
nice.
Convenient.
Yeah, especially to have it there, you know, to not have to be traveling the roads, especially during that time of year.
Exactly.
Yeah. One of the subjects we've talked about with winemakers, and I think it applies more to you being a vineyard manager, and that is labor issues. You know, a lot of people have had labor problems, and it's getting harder to find people. What about you guys?
My dad and I try to do everything we can. We can't do everything. We have 36 acres. We do get help from another managing crew who will come in and help us with the big times of year harvest. I mean, two people can't just do harvest.
I can't even imagine.
and then another big time of year is pruning. I mean, those are two big times a year that you need a lot of people. We haven't, as of right now, the last couple of years, we haven't had a problem with it. The management crew we use really does a really good job and has been around a really long time.
I'm assuming you'll be working with these folks in the future, so theoretically you'll be in good shape
yes,
for a while.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's no foreseeable future where we won't be with them.
Good, good. So for you personally, you grew up in a winemaking family.
I grew up in a farming, more of the farming side of things. And also it was never forced upon me. So being in the wine industry, they were never like, go out and get into the vineyard. They were like, go to school. if you're interested in it, if you've got a job, let's teach you some things around the property. I mean, when I was in high school, I went to Calistoga High. I ended up shooting photos for the local newspaper. I was a lifeguard. I always helped out around the property when they needed it or if they needed something done. But it was in high school, it wasn't exactly, I didn't know still what I wanted to do. I knew about vineyards and wine, but that's because you grow up in it. I went to school for marketing and sales, and then I moved back. I worked a cellar harvest at Black Stallion. Then I moved to Park City, worked in restaurants out there. And then I moved down to New Zealand and ended up working in the vineyards down there for a pruning season. It was really, really cold, and it was
really?
Snowing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
A winery called Ripon. No, it was a lot of fun.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
It was a blast. It's out in Wanaka. So we ended up working there until I moved up to Waiheke, but then I had some complications with my knee, tore my ACL. And
oh, nice.
Moved home, got a couple certifications in the WSET courses, worked retail out in Colorado, and that's where I ended up getting Barlow Vineyards, a distributor in Colorado, and that's when my parents said, come back, work in the vineyards, take over the property as in managing, and then take over national sales so my dad doesn't have to travel as much. And that's where we're at now.
And this is what you sound like you wanted.
Yes, wine was ended up being everywhere I went, and it was just a good common ground. And I love wine. I love wine. I love the history, what it brings to the table. Really, great conversation.
Did you have an appreciation though when you were younger? I mean, as you got through high school and obviously being around it.
Yeah, it was. It was always funny. Going through college, everyone's like grabbing a big jug of some other wine. And I'm like, well, okay, but like we could drink some Barlow. I think I grew to appreciate it. It took a while to realize what I knew just by growing up in it and how much I did love the industry and love wine. Yeah.
So it just became natural to you.
It was a natural process, really.
Yeah.
I didn't really see myself not in the industry when it came to it.
Do you have siblings at all in the
business?
I have
an older sister, Alyssa Ann Stoiber. She has two little ones now, my niece and nephew.
Fourth generation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm Zachary Barlow Smith. My grandfather was Warren Barlow Smith. My dad's Warren Barlow Smith Jr. And then my nephew is Grady Barlow Stoiber. So we're keeping the name in the family.
Great. That's a good way to do it. Well, let me just kind of pedal back here for a sec about your folks and being in Calistoga, which is an incredible area to grow wine. Why Calistoga?
So my grandparents and parents loved wine. My parents went up to Humboldt and for school. My dad was a geology major. My mom was a botany major. My grandfather was in chemistry and ended up was a pharmaceutical sales representative. And then my grandmother was a personal accountant / financial manager.
They had all the perfect jobs.
It was a business plan written up without them even knowing it.
Yeah,
and they loved wine. My grandfather retired in the 80s in the late 80s. And by the early 90s, he was kind of tired of retirement. And during his work with the pharmaceutical company, he wanted to be on a vineyard and be in the vines. They didn't allow him to move. So when he was retired, he went to my parents and said, like, hey, we've made investments together. What if we sell everything and we go and start farming? And my parents said, yeah. They wanted my sister and I to grow up in a smaller town. Ended up first time we visited Northern California, I guess, and that they found this property, ended up buying it, investing in it, and that's where it all started.
That was a very smart investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys have a tasting room?
By appointment and where we can arrange it.
Okay, so they would just contact you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll come back to that in a second, but I guess my question is, do you do any tastings yourself?
Oh, I do them personally.
Oh, you do them all?
Yeah.
Oh,
my
nice.
Dad and I do.
Oh, cool.
Yes. We get to specifically, like I said, by appointment at our custom crush facility.
So my question is when you're spending time with people one-on-one like this, and when you have people, you know, again, as I told you, our goal, trying to get people to not be afraid of going into a tasting room, not to have any fears about wine, how do you make people understand it and relax? I mean, do you have any kind of particular way when you're trying to relate to somebody?
I mean, we're just the family farmers. Like, there's no, we pretty much tell them, like, we make the style of wine we like to drink. There's so many styles out there. We're not offended if you don't like our style, but come and try it. Come taste it. Everyone has a different palate. I mean, my palate changes like 100 times a day. It depends on what you've been drinking, what you've been eating, how you're feeling. Are you sick? Like, you might not be able to taste anything if you're sick. Is it spring? Do you have allergies?
Yeah, right.
There's so much that go into it. We just try to personalize it and bring it down to, like, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. And we'll start there. And then we'll get into, like, hey, if you like it, what do you like about it?
It's a good approach.
Yeah.
So when you talk to people, and maybe it be people when they're tasting or maybe in a media situation like this, is there a question you can think of that you've never been asked that you'd like to answer?
That's a good question. The big question, and this changes for everyone, is why do you buy a wine? And do you know where that wine actually comes from? Do you know that it starts and it just doesn't appear as grapes? It starts as a vine. When does that vine start in your mind?
That's a good answer. Where does your food come from?
Yeah.
Does it come from a grocery store?
No, it does not.
I love how serious you get when you say that. Because many farmers have that attitude.
It all starts with the soil. And for us, we have a very particular soil, which is great, which makes great wine. But it all starts somewhere. And a lot of people, I don't know if they know where it starts. I would assume they do, but you never know.
Yeah, assuming it is exactly what that is, you don't know. Really.
Yeah.
There's so much education that goes into drinking wine.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to.
It's all, I mean, I like this, how you're trying to make it a little easier for people, because it is, I mean, if you just go at it alone, it's very overwhelming. I mean, if you just know Napa Valley, that's only a 4/10 of the percentage of wine. In California, that's only 4% of the wine that California produces. I mean, that's one name, very, very small name, but, well, very, very big name, but
small
very, very, very small area, Napa Valley in general. So there's so much out there, which is cool if you think of it like that, because you have so much to explore.
Do you ever find yourself having to kind of step away from the, you know, the perception of the glitz and glamour of Napa Valley and just, again, trying to explain to people, look, my hands are dirty, I'm a farmer?
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on where you go in the Napa Valley for that glitz and glamour. There's big producers, there's small producers, there's medium producers, and then there's so many different types of tasting rooms. I mean, with us, it's by appointment with me or my dad.
Which is pretty darn cool.
Or there's the ones where you can walk up. They've been grandfathered into where you can just walk up and there's a tasting bar. And maybe the person behind the tasting bar is someone who deals with grapes on a daily basis, or maybe that person is there who knows the wine really, really well and is pouring you the wine. I think when you say you, I grew up on a vineyard versus saying like we own a winery. It changes things too, because we don't have a winery. We're in the vineyard. We run based on growing grapes.
Sure.
And then we make, like I said earlier, we make the style of wine we like to drink, and we hope other people enjoy it too.
There are a lot of winemakers in Napa Valley that don't have a winery, that are,
oh, yeah,
they're vineyard owners.
Very and much so.
That's something for people to understand.
It's, yeah.
They're doing the exact same thing you are, only differently.
Yep.
Yeah. I love how you explain that. Now, you'd mentioned how many cases you're making. Are you distributed at all, or are you strictly through a wine club?
We have a wine club. You get 4-bottle wine club or a case wine club, and it's shipped out twice a year, our new releases. And then you have access to our library wines. With distribution, with not having that walk-up tasting room, yeah, we don't have the foot traffic. So being in market, and also when you're growing a brand, it helps getting out in front of people. So we are in a couple different markets, Colorado, Wisconsin.
Oddly enough, here we are.
Yep. New York, Florida, Texas. We are also in Illinois, and then here and there, Rhode Island.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for our listeners to learn about you online and possibly schedule a tasting, what's your website?
It's barlowvineyards.com. And if you want to set up an appointment, you can email me directly at zach@barlowvineyards.com. And that is zach@barlowvineyards.com.
Yeah, I got to get the right Zach.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of people can misspell that one.
There are a few Zach spellings out there, yeah.
Some funky ones.
Yes, there are. Zach, this has been a real pleasure having you here at the studio, and you're an easy guy to talk to. So, you know, people should come visit you. So thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Well, thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Learn more by visiting barlowvineyards.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2018.